Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Total Information AM with Tom Ackerman. I'm Megan Lynch. We're about to wrap up this hour, but we need to look at the fact that U.S. ports from Maine to Texas shut down yesterday when the union representing about 45,000 dock workers went on strike. It's the first time since 1977. A lengthy shutdown could raise prices on goods around the country and potentially cause shortages for industry and consumers. With us now, Peter Goger, account executive at OEC Group's St. Louis Bureau. Peter, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Megan. Happy to be here.
So when we look at this strike, what does each day of this mean for the U.S. economy?
Yeah, I think they roughly say that about $4 to $5 billion worth of costs are accumulated each day of a strike. And we really kind of look things in our industry of weeks. I mean, we have to sort of plan to say, is this going to go on for a week or is it going to go on for multiple weeks? Each week roughly equals a month of delays.
Wow, that is a big number. So what's the biggest chunk of that? Is it consumer goods? Is it industrial parts? Is it both?
Yeah, I mean, there is plenty of consumer goods that come to the East Coast, roughly 50% East, I should say East and Gulf, right? We have to remember this is Maine to Texas. It's a lot of ports involved. But yeah, 50% of the U.S. imports come through the East Coast versus the West Coast. That affects anything from cars to food, some food products, and to some consumer goods. A lot of the consumer goods and stuff that we're going to be trying to enjoy for Christmas and other holiday gift giving, a lot of those things, you know, they can be routed over the West Coast. So a lot of those companies have known about this well in advance and have made some plans. We've seen increased inventories leading up to this in case this happened. But certainly the longer this goes on, then the potential for any of those other issues start to increase.
Peter, one of the things that we have heard about this is that not only consumer goods will be impacted, but also, for example, industrial parts for factories. So talk about that and the ripple effect for some of our industry in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I have some customers here in St. Louis that do, different parts in manufacturing for in the automotive and other industries. So they're internal components. So for them, you know, they have considerations of line down or other issues, but a lot of those parts and pieces, they probably come from, you know, Asia and China, and they have a clear transportation network into St. Louis and into the Midwest, and we can even take stuff over to the East Coast for a lot of those products. If people have line down situations, we've already been working with them on contingency plans. They might be air freighting stuff. They might be just routing them via trucks and trying to take express routes. Most of the time, you know, people have had a lot of notification about this in advance, you know, and a lot of companies have tried to plan some contingency plans around it and try to be prepared for it. But certainly some of the stuff that's coming from Europe or India, those are the two in Middle East are the two biggest areas that are impacted. I mean, that makes about 37% of the imports into St. Louis area are from India, Italy, and France over the East Coast. And, you know, there's anything from like pharmaceutical chemical products. And some other, automotive manufacturing pieces that come over from Italy and the Mediterranean area. But, you know, they're certainly going to have some considerations there, and they're probably working accordingly to either air freight or looking for some other, backup rerouting across the West Coast, although that takes time. And right now, nobody's rushing to make emergency changes because we're still in the first week. It's sort of wait and see.
This is Peter Goger, account executive at OEC Group St. Louis Bureau, with us on KMOX. The longshoremen, look, wages, that's one thing. And certainly we can sit here and talk about going back and forth on pay. But the automation seems like a big deal, a real sticking point here. Can you describe what that automation, what they are concerned about, and how much of it is being used already? And, of course, we're talking about moving those containers back and mm-hmm. forth.
Yeah, so the port automation is a big sticking point, I think, globally in international shipping. We only have a couple ports in the United States that are fully automated, But the ILA is very concerned about anything from semi-automation to automation. There was some attempts this last year to introduce some tallying and truck counting automation into their system, and they were in an uproar about it. And that's a big part of the reason why they feel like they have grievances here. We've been following Daggett, the head of the ILA, and a lot of his comments in our industry. You know, and it seems like he's taking a pretty hard line against automation. But for the rest of the world, that represents anything from cranes being automated and automated trucks inside the port, which is the furthest level of automation. And some of the automation is just simply, as simple as having some computer automated checkers and talliers for how many containers are coming through and for manifests and sort of paperwork automation. So they're trying to resist all levels of automation. I think the USMX, which is the port authority there that they're negotiating with, has come to them and said, hey, we have a deal on the table that is roughly the same language as what we had previously, and the ILA is uninterested. So they are really trying to push back against future automation attempts. They see it as preserving their future. And I think the rest of the world kind of sees it as this is the progress that's starting to happen at every other major world port.
Bottom line, how much power do the longshoremen have to hold out for what they want?
They have quite a bit of power in this situation. I think they know it. They've been talking about it well in advance. So, again, anybody who's been following this in our industry would have been planning according, because we understand that they do have a significant position here. It's not simply that they're going to allow other workers to come in, or that, you know, automated ports are going to get turned on next week and put them out of the job. They know that they're essential workers. They're vital to our country, and so they're taking their stand. So it's as though the administration has said right now, you know, they said it's really a dispute between the employer and the employees, and, you know, they just need to come to an agreement on this. So I think the ILA knows their position. They have a lot of support from most of the other unions. We've seen, you know, what Montreal has done, their sympathy strike. There's a few other non-union ports or side union ports in other areas that have done some sympathy strikes for a day or two to go along with this. So I think they know their position is strong. It's just going to be a matter of, you know, is there going to be a deal put to the table that they can agree to, and how long can they wait out? You know, sometimes we think it might be 2 weeks to 3 weeks. That's sort of our industry understood probably for this projection. But at this point, let's get through the week and then see where things go from there to determine really what position they're at after this first week and see if they're still holding strong.
Account executive at OEC Group St. Louis Bureau, Peter Goger, with us on KMOX. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.